All right, and we are back. You're listening to KKUP Cupertino 91.5 FM, and it's a little bit of the extended vibrational voyage tonight. I've got a guest here. Her name's Alicia Danforth. She's a psychedelic researcher, and she's actually working on finishing up a PhD in transpersonal psychology. And she's been talking with us tonight about her work, firsthand experiences with some of the first research that's been done using psychedelics with human subjects. So that's a fascinating subject all unto itself. And I want to get back to something you were saying just a couple of minutes ago, because I don't get too many people who bring the subject up, but you were quoting Maria Sabina.
Yeah, but before we go there, there's just one real important clarification I want to make.
Sure.
Is that I'm part of the second wave of psychedelic research, mm-hmm. and psychedelic research with human subjects was actually all the rage during certain times from the 50s through the early 70s.
There was significant human psychedelic
in quite a different, quite a wide array of areas, ranging from alcoholism to depression to, you know, there was quite a bit of interest. Research. I've recently done some writing on the studies that were done from 1959 to the early 70s with children with severe autism. Mm-hmm. Sometimes children who were younger than 5 years old, who were given psilocybin and LSD.
Wow.
So there is a pretty substantial amount of literature out there. However, a lot of it's been dismissed because it wasn't done to today's standards of methodological rigor.
Really?
So anybody who's interested, there's some really fascinating studies that were done before the government clamped down and made it so prohibitive for researchers to get the permissions they needed that, for the most part, it was dropped for the better part of 40 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, that's very fascinating stuff. And I heard about some of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, it's out there.
Even when I was in college in the 80s, I heard about some of that research. And it was kind of mentioned then as though, you know, again, like you had just said. But that's all not available right now, and it's all illegal. We can't even get access to it legally. And at the same time, you know, there was a great amount of exploration and experimentation going on.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. It's resuming now.
Yeah.
Throw that in there.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned a little story there, and it got my attention. You said that when Maria Sabina was given synthetic psilocybin, she said, and she was very experienced with the plant sources, she said that it was similar in quality. What was exactly that she said? What did she say?
I'm paraphrasing people who are paraphrasing, but it was something to the effect of, you know, the little people are in there.
Well, and that's the thing. When I've talked to people who've had their very own, very first experiences, they will describe interactions with entities, other beings. And when I myself have had experiences like that, it's shocking. It's these beings, or whatever they are, these little people, I guess the way she's describing it, for me they were sometimes very big. They act in completely spontaneous, shockingly surprising ways, and sometimes they communicate, usually, sometimes with words, but usually it would be more through feelings and energy. And there was this sense of playfulness for certain, but also sometimes a sense of guidance or information. But sometimes it was so shocking, the form that these things presented themselves in. I remember one time, several experiences I had, it was this big octopus. And I had such a hard time getting used to the octopus. And finally, I kind of got used to the octopus, and I was kind of, you in a state where I was very accepting and just kind of going with it, breathing with it and everything. And, you know, like the next few moments, this was an eyes closed experience. I closed my eyes again, and it was this big, literally a 4-foot glowing cockroach. And that just pushed me around the bend. It was like, I just got used to the octopus. Now it's the cockroach. And I heard Terrence McKenna say sometimes that there's even more wild things than anyone could imagine that were part of the things that he had experienced. But it was always something surprising. And it also had its playfulness and not infrequently humorous quality. Of course, you know, you hear the reports of people having not only profound experiences, but also profound laughter. So I was just wondering, any of those experiences that you may have heard stories about, or maybe any of the subjects that were in the studies that had really marvelous or peculiar experiences that they reported.
Oh, yeah, definitely. There was a wide range of experiences that I think would fall into this broad category that you're describing. One that comes to mind wasn't so much about a specific entity, but the introduction of an awareness with so much conviction that it really was real guidance and a real message that was received. One of the participants in the study, we didn't know until afterwards, but we did confirm that it was the active psilocybin. At the end of her session, she was somewhat she really went within mm-hmm. in her study and didn't communicate with us in words very much during the study. And at the end, she kind of surprised us, and she suddenly sat right up in bed and whipped off her eye shades and her headphones. And if it was a movie, there'd kind of be that funny special effect where, you know, the wind would blow back our hair. We were just really taken aback. And she said, I was just reminded that I live in a universe full of endless love. I'm surrounded by infinite love all the time. And it was so real for her in the moment. And she talked about how reassuring that was for her as she was preparing to die. That she was surrounded by just boundless love. And afterwards, we talked about it and sort of compared notes, you know, whoa, did you see what I saw? And we all had the sensation that, you know, if she were a cartoon, there would just be beams of light shining from her face, that it felt in the moment very much as if we were witnessing something extraordinary.
Wow.
And I really felt that she had access to some kind of information that was very, you know, at the same time rare, but at the same time a reminder of what she always knew was true for her. In some instances, people had, you know, really great anecdotes about, you know, visions that they had and messages they got from different sources. One participant was a very dedicated practicing Buddhist, and she had some interactions with some Kyoto monks who, you know, provided her with some guidance and wisdom on her journey. Someone else who had kind of a shamanic worldview contacted some of her guides who gave her some very valuable insight into the fact that her cancer would eventually take her life. She had not accepted prior to her participation in the study that her cancer was terminal. We always avoided using that term because who knows?
Yeah.
She realized this is what was meant to be, and was able from that time forward to really approach her mortality and leaving this world and her family in a very you know, peaceful way, in a way that allowed her to really find meaning in her last months. Again, I don't have any good anecdotes about a particular like a giant cockroach or an octopus.
Well, I guess I supplied those tonight.
I know that some of that was going on. I heard great stories about wonderful visions where, you know, interesting creatures came and had conversations and closed eye moments. One of the kind of unexpected things that happened was someone who really earned my admiration was a woman who had never done a psychedelic. She hadn't done drugs. And she was lived her life fairly conservatively, and she went to church and raised her family. And she just had heard about this study and wondered if she could improve the quality of her remaining time by doing this study. And after her first session, she kind of went away and said, you know, well, if that was psilocybin, I'm not impressed. I thought, we're not supposed to know when it's the placebo, but it was probably the placebo. So the second time, she went so deep. She just let go of her resistances and any fear that she was having about what it would feel like to be high for the first time, and just let, you know, any healing that was available to her come. And pretty late in the session, we noticed that she was starting to move in a very distinct way that I hadn't seen before. Mm-hmm. And she began placing her hands kind of rhythmically and repeatedly on each of the chakra centers of the body. At first, it just looked like she was kind of moving her hands and arms up and down her body. But then I started paying real careful attention. I said, wait, that's the root chakra, you know, second chakra, third chakra. She'd go to the heart. And then she would do these interesting kind of symbol movements around her head that I had seen people who practice Reiki do before.
Yeah.
And it just became so intense. The energy in the room really shifted, and I couldn't take my eyes off of what I was seeing. I don't know what was taking place. I don't know if she knows, but it felt as if I was witnessing something mystical. And that's about as specific as I can be, but she also would rest her hands in a very distinct mudra. Uh-huh. She'd make the chin mudra position when she would rest.
I see.
And this was not a woman who had ever had any training in yoga, right, or chakra centers or energy medicine. It was entirely spontaneous. And her account of it later really confirmed how non-ordinary what she was experiencing was, and it really allowed her to have a significant spiritual shift. She was very quick to say, I believe in science and I can't make any conclusions based on one experience, but I was real curious, so I wrote, sent an email to Stanislav Grof and introduced myself and said, we observed this in a psilocybin session. Have you ever seen anything like this? And, you know, he's seen it all. He's like, oh, yes, this would happen from time to time. And he wrote me back a nice note, included a little paragraph from a book on holotropic breathwork. He said, oh, yeah, when we were doing the LSD studies, we would see that where people would simultaneously start doing yoga asanas and mudras and very distinct practices that they had no prior familiarity with. So it happened from time to time that we would get a glimpse at something very non-ordinary.
That's a marvelous story. Well, I want to wrap it up, but I want to give you a chance to tell everybody where they can learn more and where they can, you know, participate if they're interested in, you know, and not just learning, but doing.
great because we're getting asked all the time now from people from all different walks of life, how do I get involved? How do I do this research? How do I support it? And there are several ways now. I'll provide a couple of options depending on people's interests. One way to get involved, if you're kind of interested in the cultural shifts, you know, public policy and so on, there are a lot of organizations that have to do with drug policy and so on. I'm more familiar with the research end of things. There's an organization called MAPS, which stands for the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies.
And they're local.
And they're local, and they just hosted a fabulous, well-attended, exciting conference here in San Jose. There are opportunities with MAPS to get involved as a volunteer, as a member. They have a fantastic website, www.maps.org. Lots of different ways to get involved. And if your particular interest is MDMA research or cannabis, they have some exciting projects going on now. If your interest is in psilocybin research, in particular the quality of life, near the end of life type of research, the organization that has been raising private funding, it's important at this point to throw in there that this research is being supported by people who are passionate about it.
Oh, that's
and
wonderful.
It is not government funded at this point for the most part.
Yeah.
The HEFTER, H-E-F-F-T-E-R, HEFTER Research Institute, funded our study, and they're currently supporting similar studies that are taking place at NYU and at Johns Hopkins. So there are opportunities to participate as a participant for anybody who can be in those areas, enroll in the study and take part. And it's also possible to go to the website HEFTER, HEFFTER.org, and make a donation. And you can say, you know, I want to support the study going on here or there. And those websites are also great sources for information. If just getting information about safety and getting good, solid research and information is someone's interest, arrowid.org is a fantastic first stop for just education about psychoactive substances of all types.
Spell it for everybody.
It's E-R-O-W-I-D, Arrowid, and they have an abundance of all sorts of information about you name it, you know, sources of bibliographies, places to read more, basics about just about any substance you might be curious about. There's information about safety and psychopharmacology and history. And again, they are a membership organization. I encourage anybody who's interested in this field to get involved in that way. They frequently have opportunities to volunteer at festivals. They may need support from time to time around some of the data that they archive, data entry, or contributing in some way to their web presence. So there are some really great ways to get involved these days. So
marvelous. And if people would like to hear more about your work in particular, or about the studies that you've participated in directly, is there a place where people can hear about your work or contact you, or what would you say?
Well, there are a couple of options. If people are interested in the clinical research that's going on, maybe they know somebody in one of the populations that's being studied who might want to volunteer, or they just want information about the research in general, the government has a clinical trial registry site, and that's www.clinicaltrials.org. plural, clinicaltrials.gov. And if you do a search, for the word hallucinogen, because that's the medical term people use, or by substance, you can get sometimes some pretty extensive information about the protocol, the inclusion-exclusion criteria, and so on. To get in touch with me, oh, I hate to put this out there, but I'll be brave. I am on Facebook. Trying to think of the best way to reach me directly.
Well, like, for instance, I saw you sent me a link that has some information about you on Arrowhead.
There's
some biographical information.
That's right. That's kind of new. I have a profile now on the Arrowhead Character Vaults. It's one of the pages. I think it's under, you know, culture. If you fish around on the main menu, it'll lead you to an area where they've got biographical sketches on all sorts of people who've been contributing to advancing psychedelic science. Some people who've been prominent figures in the counterculture, have been involved more in the political or legal end, but all sorts of people who have been involved in this work in one capacity or another are listed there. And I guess I'm in there now too. And if you look up Alicia Danforth in the Arrowhead Character Vaults, that's one way to find out more.
And is there actually any email or anything that's in there? You said you got a Facebook page.
I do have a Facebook page, but people are finding us. And did I mention I'm a full-time student? I'm not always able to respond, but we do make an effort.
How much time is left in your studies until you get a PhD?
Until I'm a licensed clinical psychologist. It's a long haul because I kind of came in backwards to doing this research. I'm finishing my second year, just completing my first year of what's known as practicum internship. Mm-hmm. Have another year to go, a year of dissertation writing, another year of full internship, licensing exam. So it'll be a while until I'm a licensed clinical psychologist, but I'll get there.
Yeah, indeed. Well, and you're still actually involved in the research. You're actually working on a new study now, right?
Kind of a satellite operation on the opposite side of the country. The team at Johns Hopkins is working with a larger number of participants and a higher dose of psilocybin than our study. So they're advancing the work, and they face a lot of the same challenges anybody recruiting for any cancer study faces. It's hard to find people who are simultaneously ill enough and well enough to participate in a study. So I use quite a few different web resources to help them recruit participants.
I see. Well, it's been a real joy talking with you. I'm so glad that Neil actually either told me about you or told you about me. I think you contacted me. Somehow we got in touch with each other.
Randy at Maps.
Okay.
Sent out an email.
That was a real nice connection. So I thank you. You said it was Randy?
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Randy. And thanks to Neil. And thanks very much to Alicia for being here tonight. I appreciate it. And I'd love to do another conversation like this. So at any point, if you feel like, oh, this might be a fun thing to talk about, feel free to let me know and we'll do this again.
It's always a pleasure to talk about something that I feel so much passion towards, and I think a lot of us in the field are delighted when people actually want to talk about it.
Yeah.
And it's nice to be able to speak freely and get some of these ideas out there that have been so suppressed for a long time.
I agree. I mean, I love to hear about it. It's a rare thing when I hear it, so I agree. And although it's a subject that's near and dear to my heart, we don't talk about it every week, and so it's a good thing. And I think now, especially while there's such good momentum going, that's good news. And whatever we can do to kind of support that and help it move in a good direction is a good thing.
Thank you so much for inviting me down.
You're welcome, and thank you again.